Good morning, and welcome to the broadcast of the First Christian Church of Pittsfield. The First Christian Church of Pittsfield is committed to reach, teach, and empower people with the life-changing message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The First Christian Church is located at 225 North Memorial Street in Pittsfield. Our phone number is area code 217-285-4129. Our service times are Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and at 10:30 a.m. in the sanctuary. Every Sunday morning, there is Sunday School Hour for all ages at 9:15. For more information or service times, you can visit our website at www.fccpittsfield.org or just simply contact the church office. Thank you for joining us this morning, and may God bless you.
In our series on desperate measures, of course, that old saying, desperate times call for desperate measures. And if you're like me, you're looking around saying, we are certainly in some desperate times. And so we've tried to look at the life of the prophet Elijah in relation to a culture around that had rejected the principles and the statutes of God. And so we've been kind of going through and breaking down the various points of the life of Elijah here. And as I was preparing this week, I recognized that the NFL had started back up, but I personally will not be watching any games. They've made it too political for me. But I was looking at an article that was done back with NPR, and that was back in 2016 in November. There was a researcher named Michael Lopez, and he was a statistician from Skidmore College in New York. And he actually did a study that said that that referees are more likely to favor the team whose coaches and players are on the sideline closest to a potential penalty. This is a very interesting study. Basically, he analyzed 5 years of games and looked at 1,400 penalties where it happened right next to a particular bench. And the specific thing that he looked at was a judgment call, a late hit, where an individual was getting ready to be tackled, and they're allowed to be tackled inbounds, but if they're out of bounds, and it's usually a bam-bam play, and it's always a judgment call. And what he found after looking over 1,400 penalties and reviewing them, he said that basically, since this judgment call, he measured that when these went in favor of the team whose coaches and whose players were right next to it, and he found that the referees were much more likely to make the calls that that basically went along with the people nearest to them who are demanding that they make that call. So in short, intimidation works. How many of you have ever been intimidated in your life? Intimidation works. I mean, we see it right now. We're living in kind of a day and age when that seems to be the going way to sway opinion, is to intimidate people. And it's a very dangerous thing. You know, that people would pressure, in this instance, they pressure to referees to get in their face, so they'd often cave. And we see that in many different ways in our society playing out today. And as people who are called to follow Jesus, I want you to know that intimidation is a very real thing as well. I know we've all heard about peer pressure and those things. Many of us have experienced it in our life, and sadly, as Christians in today's world, we are feeling more and more pressure against our biblical worldview. In fact, a recent Barna survey just came out to take a look at changing biblical positions that go against a societal norm, and it has seen, because of the pressure of society, that even many churches and many denominations are abandoning long-held biblical beliefs simply because of intimidation. Intimidation is a very, very real thing, and it can take on many forms. But when we encounter intimidation, it has an impact on us. I mean, it's a rough thing. No one likes it when they get yelled at. No one likes it when someone comes up and just really begins to lay into them. It gets our adrenaline going. It's a very unsettling experience. And in our text today, we're going to continue looking at the prophet Elijah in one instance. But it's interesting the when of how this happens. So let me set it up. Because Elijah, as we left off, had this confrontation with Ahab and the prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel. Now, remember what we said last week, that God responded by making a miracle. And this miracle, he consumed by fire a burnt offering off of a repaired altar, along with water, with wood and with stone. Now that's a hot fire. Okay? That's a hot fire. Then Elijah commanded that all the prophets of Baal be killed by the sword. And then he prayed, and we talked last week that he went up and did this interesting yoga prayer. Okay, not yoga, but he bowed himself down and he prayed, and a 3.5 year drought ended by this deluge of rain. All right? So all of this has happened. God has done some amazing things, and right on the tail end of this, okay, then God anoints him to run and empowers him to run faster than a chariot. And then here's where we pick it up in 1 Kings 19, 1 through 3. Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, "So may the gods do to me and more also, if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by this time tomorrow." Then he was afraid. And he arose and did what? He ran for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and he left his servant there. Why is it, gang, that we can have so many encounters with God? We can have so many positive things happen in our life, or perhaps in a day, or perhaps in a season. And then all of a sudden, all it takes is one negative thing to wipe it all out. Have you ever noticed that? Have you ever noticed? And so I have 4 points for you today. First point is this. The enemy wants us to focus on his voice more than God's. And we see this happen. I've seen this in my life. I've seen this in a lot of people's lives. You know, you can be in the scene where God just does amazing things. God has provided for you. God has maybe, answered prayers in many different ways. And we're like on that mountaintop, and you're glorying in the fact that, oh God, you're awesome. You've done some amazing things. And all it takes is one phone call or one letter or one confrontation, and you are rocked. You find yourself, where's that faith that I just stood in? I mean, look at this, seriously. Consider Elijah's track record with God. Just for a moment, 3.5 years he'd prayed, and for 3.5 years, not a single drop of rain. I mean, so each day that went, you're like, man, God is still being faithful. You know, God took care of him through a bird and a brook. That's pretty amazing. Imagine that long season, every day, through a jar and a jug, that this flour and this oil didn't give out. Every day, there was more and more to create a sustenance and a bread. Every day, he experienced this miracle. He brought a child back to life when he prayed and asked for this child's life. God responded by prayer, by fire and a deluge of rain. And yet one intimidating message is all it takes for that to go out the window. Before I ask you that question, doesn't that happen in our life? I can think of a couple reasons. Number one is, during that season when God keeps doing all those wonderful things, we become accustomed to it and we forget that it's a miracle. I mean, I kind of wonder that, you know, why every day that the bird is dropping by and giving him something to eat, and that the brook's sustaining for him, and every day that the widow's making him a cake and giving it to him, and they are eating in the household. The first couple of days when God's doing something, we think, wow, that's awesome, right? And then after about day 5, we grow accustomed. I just wonder, church family, have we grown accustomed to the miracles of God that we continue to walk in, and the blessings of God that he gives us each and every day, to the point where we no longer feel that they're miraculous? Those of us who prayed and God delivered, maybe we prayed for sustenance and God allowed us and led us to a job, and we have been living in that job. Maybe we've been, you know, earlier in our life, we prayed for a spouse and God brought us a spouse. Now we're living in that every single day in our life. We prayed for healing and God healed, and we've lived and walked in that every single day in our life. And have we forgotten to give thanks anymore? Here's the danger, is when we take for granted the blessings of God, we find ourselves very vulnerable. You see, Satan intimidates to distract from remembering and being encouraged by God's faithfulness. You see, what happens is when you get to that place, the enemy wants you to focus on his voice, not God's. And so he begins to intimidate you so that you will be drawn. You're going to hear that barking dog. And so you can't think that there's a fence or that he's on a chain. You are so intimidated that all you can do. And I'm going to tell you, this is a very, very serious phenomenon. It is a serious. How many of you have ever dealt with this? I mean, I certainly have. It's rough when you get when you have that spirit of intimidation that comes against you. It messes with you, and you forget to ask the question: why do I let one bad comment? Why do I let one threat have more weight in my life than all of this experience that I have with God? Why do we do that, gang? We know that God has provided for us in seasons past, and then when we have a season of need that comes to us, we think, did Elijah stop to think, well, wait a minute, God has provided for me, God has protected me, God has done all these things for me, so what? No, because intimidation grabs a hold of us and demands our attention. That's how you know it's an attack of Satan. It demands your attention. It screams at you and tries to distract you from connecting with God. In fact, you do the opposite. You try to fix it in your own strength. I'm going to tell you, these are lies from the enemy. John 8, 44 through 48, Jesus lets us know about who's the author of these things. It is Satan. It says that he was a murderer from the beginning and has nothing to do with the truth because there's no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. But because I tell you the truth, you do not believe me. What he's saying there is, gang, why do we believe Satan more than God? And before you say, I don't, when we fear, we do. And that's why I think about this. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is with me. Whom shall I fear? We can declare that boldly one moment. Then the phone call, the doctor's report, the letter, the uncomfortable confrontation, and immediately we put more weight into the accusation and the lie of Satan than we knew do from God. You know, here's what I want us to do, church. If I could melt down this entire message into two phrases, or it's these two phrases. Phrase number one is stop empowering lies. And phrase number two is start empowering truth. When that intimidation comes, you gotta stop empowering lies and start empowering truth. And by the way, the strong are not immune from this attack. At this point, man, Elijah, he's got some serious clout there. Let's go on. Let's keep reading what happens here. 1 Kings 19, 3 through 4. Then he was afraid, and he arose and ran for his life and came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness and came and sat down under a broom tree. You could say he was getting swept away. I know that was bad. I actually wrote that in my notes. Sorry. I know that's bad. But the truth is there. You know, what is this broom tree? Here's kind of like a picture of about what it would look like. It's a plant, the rotum tree. It's basically like a bush. And there's just enough shade for one person to maybe find a little bit of break from the intense heat. So that brings me to my second point. The enemy wants to isolate you. That's what the enemy wants to do. He wants to isolate you. Okay? Listen to what Elijah's saying. Then he asked that he might die, saying, it's enough now, O Lord. Take this away. Take away my life, for it's better. I'm no better than my father's. This is an old strategy that has worked against mankind all the way back from the Garden of Eden. I mean, this is what he did. Satan attacked Eve. He tried to separate Adam and Eve. Satan loves to divide and conquer, and Sun Tzu's Art of War, one of the most elementary military strategies and tactics, is to divide and conquer. In fact, Sun Tzu says, look, it's even better to get your troops, to get your troops to sit and rest while the enemy, you know, who you're against, to get them to turn on each other without you lifting a finger. And that happens. That happens in times. Do you know that sometimes I've read about this in a book somewhere that their churches sometimes fight amongst themselves? I was shocked. Yeah. You know, we can kind of break that down. Never. What Satan's strategy is, he wants to distract you from God. He wants you to believe the lie. He wants to separate you. He wants to divide and conquer and turn people against each other. I'm perplexed at this relationship with Elijah and his servant, and I want to ask, why in the world didn't they stick together? I mean, years of ministry that they've seen, that this servant has been with Elijah and he didn't stay, or Elijah has had this servant with him and then he separates. This is not a good thing. Here's the deal, gang, and this is, I know, what's common practice. This is what Satan does. When you are being intimidated, when Satan's coming against you, he wants to whisper these things in your ear. No one understands. Have you ever heard that voice whispering in your ear? No one understands what I'm going through. No one understands what I'm going through. You know what? No one cares. No one really cares. No one in the church gave me a call. No one in the church gave me a call. No one really gets it. No one. Did you tell anybody? No, they should know. They should know. They should have known. Satan is whispering and continue. They should know, thus they should have intervened. If they knew, they should have intervened. I am better off alone. All a bunch of hypocrites. Here's the deal anyways, I'm all by myself. You ever heard these voices? How about this one? I don't belong. I can guarantee you, I've heard every one of these voices when Satan's been trying to work on me. I look back in my life, I know that Satan's whisper, no one really gets you, no one really understands, no one cares, no one really cares, okay? No one, that, look, people should have known, and here's what I've gotten to know, is that I have a responsibility to the body of Christ. And what I've had to do with each one of these lies is understand, don't empower the lie, but empower the truth. And the truth is, I'm part of a body. And so what I've learned to do is to reach out and to swallow my pride and say, I'm hurt. I'm wounded. Can you please help? And then I see the power of the kingdom working together. In years of ministry and talking with pastors as well as with church members, I've come to learn this truth. People get hurt. People get let down. People get offended. People get disappointed. And Satan comes quickly and starts the voice of accusation. I can make one promise to every one of you that I know that I will keep. I'll let you down. I don't want to. I do not want to. It's not my heart, but I promise I will. It's not my intention, but I promise I'll let you in. And any wise, real church leader is probably going to say the same thing. I'm going to do my best, but I know that my best won't be good enough because I can't be God. And so in those times, here's what we need to do. We need to not empower the voice of the lies of Satan. We need to empower the voice of truth. I find it interesting that here this all along, he was laying down his life and now he's running for his life. He's talking about quitting. This happens. I've talked with pastors and leaders who've gotten to this place to say, just like Elijah, enough, enough. I got to tell you, I've been to that place to say, enough. I'm done. I'm ready to throw in the towel. And here's the beautiful thing that we see happening, going on our story, verse 5. And then he lay down and slept under a broom tree. And behold, an angel touched him and said, get up and eat. No, I'm sorry, it was a little more eloquent. Arise and eat. And he looked, and behold, there was at his head a cake baked on a hot stone and a jar of water. And he ate and drank and laid down again. Ever been there? I just can't deal with it today. Go back to bed. And the angel of the Lord did what? Came again a second time and touched him and said, arise and eat, for the journey is too great for you. And he arose and ate and drank and went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the Mount of God. If you've been sleeping underneath the broom tree, here's the good news. I'm going to put it to you in another one of the enemy doesn't want statement is this. My next point, the enemy doesn't want you to know that God is really near. Here he is running away. He is hurt. He's upset. He's disappointed. He's intimidated. This is not in the character of Elijah. I mean, when we think of Elijah, we think about him confronting. And now he's tucking tail and he's running. There's a word I want to use, but I'm not going to use it. I don't want to offend anybody. But he's in this place. But I want you to know this. If you are underneath that broom tree, if you're sitting there and you're like in that bad place, here's what Satan doesn't want you to know. God is near and God will give you what you need to get you back to where he wants you to be. Hey, here's the truth, gang. God will give you what you need to get you to where he wants you to be. Now, it might not be enough to solve all your problems. I mean, at this point, is he dealing with Jezebel? Nope. He's not dealing with Jezebel. He's not dealing with the immediate issue. What he's trying to do is get him to a place. And sometimes that's where we need to do. Your healing when you get to this place sometimes comes in steps. But know this, God is near. And he may have to tell you a few times. Anybody have to be told by, when you got your nose knocked out of joint and you got hurt and you began to embrace intimidation, it doesn't necessarily come back all at once. Sometimes it has to come in steps, steps to restoration. But God, this is what I love about God. He walks with us and he'll give you more than one opportunity. You may not get everything that you need, but you will get enough. And then he'll send, I love that he says he sent an angel to minister. You know who those angels have been in my life? Because by the way, the word angels, it literally if you translate it, means messengers of God. There have been some times that God's angels have actually been people. Sometimes some of you, without even knowing it. Sometimes another pastor. Sometimes I have been so down, I have sent the post office, changed my address to Broomtree. I'm sure I got 11 voting recommendations to Broomtree, just waiting for me. And God has been faithful, and his angels sometimes have been that other person on the other side of the phone to say, hey, I got a little something for you. It's not enough. You know, it's enough. You need to go to the next. Keep going. And he'll send another one. Just enough. I'm on the process. I'm not there yet. But I'm keeping moving. Look, if you're not there yet, I get it. Elijah's not there yet. But he's moving and God is where he is at. Let's get to the conclusion of the story here. 1 Kings 19, 9 through 18. There he came to a cave and lodged in it. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him. And said to him, you ready? What are you doing here, Elijah? That's a great question. What are you doing here? I have a couple. I'm really blessed. I'm a blessed man. Because my whole life I've been a loner. And I have good friends in the ministry. I'm very thankful for the ministries of DHF. Because I've got a group of pastors around that I can just be very plain to. And a lot of times, this is their response. What are you doing here? Not here in Pittsfield. What are you doing underneath the broom tree? Look, we can rehearse with you what God has already... I know, I just need that, okay? It says, look, what are you doing here, Elijah? That's a legitimate question. What are you doing here? You know what the answer should be? I empowered the wrong voice. That the answer should be, I'm afraid of Jezebel, even though, God, you have done all this stuff. My fear doesn't make sense. Therefore, it's irrational. Verse 10. And he said, I've been like this. Instead of being honest, how many times when you're trying to relate where you are, you give your version and your version isn't exactly true. Anybody have a little bit of a distortion when you look at your life and you like to recount it? Hey, what have you been? How are you doing with the Lord? I'm just doing really wonderful. I've done everything that I can do. God's just let me down. Yeah. He says, look, I've been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. And I love this one. And I only am left. And they seek to take my life, to take it away. And he said, go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord. Now this is a very important thing. He said, look, I am the only one left. What did we learn a little earlier about Obadiah? Obadiah had already been taking a bunch of the prophets and storing them and hiding them in caves. Is Elijah the only one? No. Does Elijah think he's the only one? Yeah. Do you think you're alone? Do you really think that no one gets what you're going through? Maybe not to the exact nth, but there's enough people that God has answers and help and encouragement for you. But if you're hanging out under the broom tree and you're not willing to go where God wants you to go, good luck, honey. You were not called to live isolated in the kingdom of God. You are called to be part of a family of God. He goes on, and God said, go out and stand on the mount before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in a fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak and went and stood at the entrance of the cave. And behold, there came a voice to him and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? I got to tell you what. Elijah had his truth that no one else was there, but he was wrong. So my question, church family, is this. Are you willing to allow God to replace your truth with his? I'm going to say that again. Are you willing to allow God to replace your truth with his truth? You know, here's what my truth says. You're underappreciated. No one gets you. No one understands you. You're all alone. You're by yourself. You're never going to get it. Everyone's going to let you down. Don't trust anybody. Blah, 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 blah. Here's God's truth. What are you doing here? In fact, I realize that there's some really powerful things. It's not in the demonstration. It's not in the big fiery things. It's in that still small voice. And so my final point for us here today is this. The enemy doesn't want us to remember. The enemy doesn't want us to remember. What is it that he doesn't want us to remember? He doesn't want us to remember why we're here. So let's answer the question. What are you doing here? The answer to that question is having a pity party, right? I mean, true? Is that not what Elijah's doing? He is throwing himself a pity party. Should he be throwing himself a pity party? No. Thank you. You got it. Tara has got the answer. No. Why? Because we're not alone. The enemy doesn't want us to remember that we're not alone. He wants you to continue to walk in a false narrative, to not understand that God is faithful, that God is near, that God will provide for you. I mean, up to this point, again, the real question, what are you doing here, should be, I am doing your will here. And Elijah had been doing it until he embraced fear and separation, and then he stepped out. So church family, I want to ask you a question. Why are you here? Because it's Sunday. This is what we're supposed to do, Pastor. I don't know why Gomer Pyle always comes at 8 o'clock. But here's the deal. We are not here for ourselves. Church family, look, if you're here for yourself, I get it to a certain degree. Yeah, I hope that you're here to be empowered and encouraged. But you're not. We are not here on this earth just for us. And boy, that's been a poor doctrine. I mean, I think that is a heretical doctrine, to think that we are here to only consume and to gain and to get for us, to get for us, to get for us, to get for us. What are you doing here? We are here because God has a purpose for our lives. And that purpose is awesome. And that purpose is powerful. And that purpose is far greater than just your little circle. What are you doing here? He kind of reminds him, hey, look, and the Lord said to him, look, go return in your way. He said, let's go up to the top here. Verse 19, 9 through 18. He said, I've been very jealous for the Lord. This is what Elijah say. The Lord God of hosts, for the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets. Look, when you're running in the spirit of fear, guess what? You're going to see everyone else's faults. You won't see your own, but you'll see everyone else. Okay? And he says, look, and I am left, and they seek to take my life away. And the Lord said to him, oh, knock it off. Okay, no. The Lord said to him, go, return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when you arrive, you shall anoint Hazael king over Syria. And Jehu, the son of Nimshi, and you shall anoint him king over Israel. And Elijah, the son of a bunch of weird names, you shall anoint him the prophet in your place. And the one who escapes from the sword of Hazael shall Jehu put to death. And the one who escapes from the sword of Jehu shall Elisha put to death. Now, verse 18, yet I will leave 7,000 in Israel, all the knees of those who have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. Look, God's telling him, I have purpose for you. You shouldn't be here throwing a pity party. You should be going to do my will. And I'm going to remind you what your will is, to build the kingdom. You should be pouring into other people. I want to tell you, when I throw my pity party, there's a big thing. There are Elishas that I need to be pouring my life into, and instead, I would rather lay underneath a broom tree and sing my song. Guys, what are you doing here? God wants to replace our false truth with His real truth. Stop empowering lies. Start empowering. Worship team, you can come up. Start empowering God's truth. And I pray that you will hear that still small voice. I will pray you will hear that still small voice that's just gonna give you this phrase. What are you doing here? And the answer of what we're doing here should be, I'm here to do your will. In fact, could we all just say that? I'm here to do your will. I want you to know that. Let's all say that together. If you feel comfortable, if you don't feel comfortable, don't. But if that whisper is coming to you and it's asking you, let's just respond, I'm here to do your will.
The First Christian Church of Pittsfield is committed to reach, teach, and empower people with the life-changing message of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The First Christian Church is located at 225 North Memorial Street in Pittsfield. Our phone number is area code 217-285-4129. Our service times are Sunday morning at 8 a.m. and at 10:30 a.m. in the sanctuary. For more information or service times, you can visit our website at www.fccpittsfield.org or just simply contact the church office. Thank you for joining us this morning, and may God bless you.